On this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, we discuss the wind-down of operations of one of the accrediting organizations serving the ASC industry, review accreditation in the ASC setting, and discuss accreditation with Tamar Glazer, the Advisory Board Chair for Accreditability.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Accreditability, powered by MedTrainer. Accreditability is an online platform for maintaining your accreditation documentation. For more information and to schedule a demo, visit accreditability.com. That's accreditability.com. Welcome to episode 77 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for December 2nd, 2019, recording from our studio in Spencerport, New York. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS, and I'm here with John Gailey. John is recognized as one of the nation's leading experts in all aspects of the ambulatory surgery industry, the author of the major books about the industry, and the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, the industry leader in ASC regulatory and accreditation, governance, and quality improvement oversight. John speaks frequently at both national and state ASC meetings on a wide variety of topics.
So are we full from Thanksgiving?
We were kind of restrained. We didn't eat too much, but great Thanksgiving.
Right. For those that haven't been following the podcast, both Sue and I have been on a low-carb diet, which meant that no mashed potatoes and not a lot of stuffing.
No, we each did have some stuffing.
We did.
you can't resist certain things.
Absolutely. So, and then, we had to have two meals because of our two families. So I did want to say, I don't know how I'm going to get through this, but we did lose a dear friend this past week. Unfortunately, Emily, our other dog, you might remember those that listen. We lost Haley back during the summertime, and unfortunately, we just lost Emily this last week. And the reason I bring it up is because Emily and Haley were both a part of a lot of our earlier episodes.
Yes.
with their walking around. So I dedicate this episode to my dear departed friend. On the positive side, I do want to congratulate two of our new centers, which opened in the last couple weeks. The Sasco Hill Surgery Center in Connecticut and the wonderful people out there have started up this wonderful center, focusing on eyes, but it is a multi-specialty center. And then in Buffalo, New York, Amherst Surgery Center opened up in the last couple weeks also. Both of these centers were projects that we were quite heavily involved in getting them started, and both of them are going to be undergoing early option surveys very shortly, so that'll keep me pretty close to both sides of the state over the next couple weeks.
And you're heading out first thing in the morning to New York City, so you're going to be driving through lots of snow, but then over the weekend, you get to head someplace warm.
Yes, I'm heading to Vegas. So the HHC retraining for some of our surveyors, myself included, is in Vegas this next week, as well as the Achieving Accreditation Conference. So hopefully I'll see some of you out there. Looking forward to getting away from this very cold weather. So we heard some news today about IMQ. Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
Sure. Well, we've actually spoken to Victoria from IMQ a couple of times.
Yeah.
And so we were surprised to hear this. They announced on their website that after 23 years of supporting quality in medicine, the Institute for Medical Quality, or IMQ, is winding down its operations. This is not an immediate closure. However, IMQ has begun the process of limiting its operations and some of its services in anticipation of closing. And again, quoting from the website, as we begin the wind down process, we seek to do it in a manner that minimizes any inconvenience to our clients. For specific information about each of IMQ's services, please visit the specific programs pages. In addition, you can call 415-882-5151 to speak to an IMQ representative.
They also went on to say that effective November 8th, 2019, IMQ is not accepting accreditation applications nor accepting accreditation renewals. However, they intend to continue to provide necessary services to those facilities who have already been accredited by IMQ. For such facilities, they're working to develop a transition plan with the relevant regulators as necessary that would give the facilities time to transition their accreditation to an alternative accrediting body when appropriate and desirable. They're also working on addressing similar issues for the facilities that recently applied for accreditation or that are waiting to be surveyed. Please do not hesitate to contact them if you think that your facility is in such a situation. So we interviewed our friend Victoria Semper at CASA conference this last September, and that interview has not aired yet. And then we also interviewed her probably about a year ago. I can't remember what conference that was at. I think it might have been Ohio, which we did put that interview out. So we're going to review that interview again and see if it's appropriate. I don't believe she was talking specifically about IMQ. I think it was about
I think it was more general. I think it had some good information. So hopefully we can still get that out.
But that is sad news. IMQ was one of the competitors, of course, for the various organizations out there. And so this will put some organizations in a little bit of a pickle here as they try to figure out, you know, where they head from here. So, so which is really gets down to what we're talking about during this particular episode here, where we're talking about accreditation, you know, and a little bit about how you choose organizations for accrediting. So let's take a short break and we'll come back and talk about accreditation.
Are you responsible for managing all aspects of your ASC accreditation? Is it getting difficult to manage the multiple requirements such as compliance training, equipment checklists, safety plans, and providers' credentialing records because they are not available through one source? MedTrainer is the only all-in-one cloud-based solution designed to handle a multitude of tasks related to compliance, credentialing, and now accreditation for your ASC. Accredibility, powered by MedTrainer, is designed to work with all Quad ASF, AAAHC, IMQ, Joint Commission, and Medicare standards, ensuring your facility and staff is always up to date with state and federal regulations. You'll always be ready for your next inspection. Assigning tasks has never been easier for any and all regulatory requirements. With the click of a button, you can onboard new employees with training courses, easing the burden of manual HR tasks and printouts. You can assign daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly tasks that send automated email notifications or alert you when something is overdue. Your policies and procedures, contracts, safety data sheets, equipment maintenance logs, and more can all be stored and accessed from any connected device from anywhere on MedTrainer's encrypted, secure cloud servers. And most importantly, you can have peace of mind knowing that MedTrainer gives you the flexibility and tools to keep your facility up and running and compliant every minute of every working day. Visit MedTrainer.com/ASC podcast to schedule a free demonstration and see firsthand how MedTrainer will keep your ASC always ready for the next inspection. MedTrainer. Compliance, credentialing, training, and now, accreditation solved.
Before you really go in depth into this, John, let's remind people of the different types of regulations and accreditation. There's state licensure, federal certification, and accreditation.
That's correct. So most states in the United States require state licensure in addition to federal certification. So when we're referring to licensure in the ASC space, we're referring specifically to those states that require an ambulatory surgery center to have a state license. When we refer to certification or when we refer to Medicare certification or CMS certification, we're referring to the federal regulations, the conditions for coverage, in other words, that provide us the regulatory environment in which an ASC exists. Now, some states also require accreditation. And of course, there's also the issue of deemed status accreditation, where an accrediting organization not only does your accreditation survey, but also does the Medicare certification. We should also point out here that sometimes people get confused about the difference between accreditation and certification in the different environments. So there's three main environments related to surgical services. There's hospital, referred to as hospital outpatient department or HOPD. Hospital outpatient departments are under the license of the hospital, so they don't have a separate certification from the hospital itself. And those organizations, those HOPDs, fall under what's called the conditions for participation. And when they have accreditation performed, that accreditation is performed as part of the hospital accreditation, as part of the hospital accreditation. So they don't have a separate accreditation survey. So that's hospitals. The second type of organization would be an ambulatory surgery center or surgical center. And those organizations are freestanding. They're not affiliated with the hospital directly. They might be owned by a hospital, but they are standalone organizations, and they fall under what we refer to as the CMS conditions for coverage. And the conditions for coverage are very different than the conditions for participation that govern the hospital outpatient departments. And then the last environment in which surgical services are performed is office-based practices. Office-based practices don't have either licensure or federal certification. Those organizations might have to be accredited based upon whether the state requires that. For example, New York and California are two states that require accreditation for office-based practices. So again, to put this all in perspective, there are three environments in which surgical services can occur: hospitals, which we refer to as hospital outpatient departments or HOPDs, ambulatory surgery centers, which also refer to as ASCs, and office-based practices, which go under a couple different terms, such as OBSs, like meaning office-based surgery, or OBLs, which is refers to office-based laboratories. Sue, why don't you talk a little bit about the state requirements for accreditation?
The states that require accreditation are Arizona, California, Delaware, Washington, D.C., Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Kansas, Maryland, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Texas, Utah, Virginia, and Wyoming.
Probably would have been smarter for me to give you the list of those states that do not. That actually, when I did that research, I was kind of surprised at how many states do require accreditation. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if you're in those states, you should have your federal certification as well as your accreditation. Mm-hmm. So now let's also refer back to deemed status. Now, I know we've mentioned this many times before, but we probably should refer to it again. An organization, in order to become Medicare certified, has to go through a certification survey. That survey can be performed either by the state organization that oversees the licensure program in the state, or they can choose to use a deeming authority, such as an accrediting organization. The major accrediting organizations in the ASC space are AAHC, or the Accreditation Association for Ambulatory Healthcare, the Joint Commission, also referred to as TJC, HFAP, which is the Health Facilities Accreditation Program, QuadASF, which is the Accreditation Association for Ambulatory Surgical Facilities, and of course, as we mentioned in our first section here, IMQ, which is ending now. So they are no longer accepting accreditation, but those organizations that do have IMQ accreditation could also be deemed status organizations. So as we mentioned during part one, as organizations that have formerly been accredited by IMQ start thinking about where they're going to go in the future, and for those organizations that might choose to become accredited, how do you choose the proper accrediting organization for your organization? And they are all very different, and they all have varying levels of accreditation standards. So an organization that is accredited is going to have to follow the state licensure, mm-hmm. if their state licenses them. They're going to have to follow the federal certification requirements under the conditions for coverage. And in the case of becoming accredited, they're also going to have to follow the accreditation standards. So organizations such as HFAP or HFAP don't tend to have a lot of accrediting standards in addition to the certification requirements mm-hmm. that they have. They tend to use the conditions for coverage to set the standards for their organization. Organizations such as the Joint Commission and AAHC, on the other hand, have extensive handbooks, as does QuadASF, which include standards that interpret the conditions for coverage in a different mm-hmm. way and require standards that are higher than the conditions for coverage would have. So what do you do when you're trying to choose an accrediting organization? Sue, why don't you talk about a few of those items?
Okay, well, one thing you can do is look at the websites. They explain maybe more what their focus is, and you can learn a little bit more about it. You can ask other organizations that are similar to yours what experiences they have had. And one thing, we tend to see a lot of the associations set up at conferences, so definitely recommend going to conferences. They are often set up as vendors, and you can personally speak with them. Sometimes they invite them to speak and give their perspective. So
talk about the accreditation requirements that they might have or their accreditation standards.
And if you know any surveyors, or as we mentioned, if they're set up at some of the conferences, you know, just talk to them and find out what their experience is and how they conduct their surveys.
Right. At surveyors such as myself, and of course, I interviewed Tamar Glazer, and we had actually, we did the interview, and we talked for probably another hour afterwards about our survey experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think anybody that is a surveyor in the ASC space really does like to talk about, you know, their experience in surveying and, of course, what a survey is like.
And, of course, they do have conferences. As you mentioned earlier, you're going to, you're retraining, and along with that, they have the Achieving Accreditation Conference. So there's,
which is run simultaneously with the training, yes. And that's a good way, in the case of AAHC, to learn more about the accreditation experience, to get training on how you would prepare for it, and get to meet surveyors also. I mean, obviously, it costs you money to do that, but it is a great way to learn about the accreditation experience. So I thought we would interview another surveyor. This is our audience. You get my perspective all the time from the AAHC standpoint. What we did is we interviewed Tamar Glazer from MedTrainer, who is a Quad ASF surveyor. So let's listen to that interview now. So I'd like to welcome Tamar Glazer, RN. She is the MedTrainer Credibility Accreditation Advisory Board Chair. Ms. Glazer has been in accreditation for over 20 years and has inspected ASCs in all 50 states. Ms. Glazer has also participated in developing over 150 ASCs in multiple states. Tamar's primary experience began as an OR nurse and director of nursing in the Ambulatory Surgery Center arena, and also has several years' experience in clinical nursing. She is also an accreditation surveyor who is familiar and up-to-date with Medicare and accreditation standards and methods of preparation for on-site surveys. So, Tamar, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, John.
So let's start this conversation by asking the question, why should an organization consider accreditation? Does it really make a difference?
Yeah, for several reasons. Some facilities do it because of liability insurance premiums. Some states require accreditation. Medicare requires facilities to participate in accreditation to bill for facility fees. And it also can expedite third-party payments.
And indeed, many states don't actually guarantee that they can get you up and running with certification. So a lot of organizations go with the deemed status survey in order to get things moving with Medicare much quicker, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Which leads us to the next question. What is the difference between a CMS survey, let's say for certification, and an accreditation survey? What is your take on that?
So the accreditation agencies have their list of standards, and Medicare has their list of the state operations manual that has a list of their requirements, which also includes the life safety code requirements when you apply for Medicare or Medicare deemed status.
So let's talk a little bit about the life safety issues, because in many of these surveys, there is a fine line between what the accreditation surveyor is looking for and what a CMS surveyor or a state licensure surveyor would look at. What differences do you see in that area?
Well, with a Medicare survey, there's actually a separate inspection or survey for the life safety code and someone who specializes in the building of a facility. And for a Medicare facility, there's quite a few requirements that a regular facility, a non-Medicare facility, would have to meet. Some of those facilities include certain firewalls and fire doors, a certain level of electrical, whether it's a type 1 or type 3 electrical system. And then there's requirements for the heating and air conditioning, just to name a few.
So a surveyor for an accreditation organization is still going to be looking at life safety issues. But as you said, they're not going to be looking at the NFPA 99 standards to the level that a certification or a licensure surveyor would look at.
Yes, that's correct. For a non-Medicare facility, there are still some life safety things they need to follow when it comes to backup power and emergency lighting and fire extinguishers, smoke detectors and sprinklers, that it also is dependent upon your state requirements.
So now my experience is I used to be a life safety surveyor with AAHC prior to them changing their requirements to include a member of the team that actually has some extensive experience in life safety. Is that the same with Quad ASF?
Yes. Quad ASF has an independent company that does their life safety inspections.
I see. Now, I also want to talk a little bit about the differences, and this is a little bit touchy, I think, but differences between surveyors that you would get from CMS or from the state and surveyors that you would get from an accreditation organization. Do you want to talk a little bit about the differences in the experiences of those surveyors and the training and the way they approach a survey?
So the difference between a state inspection versus an accreditation agency inspection is that the accrediting agency surveyors are more consultative. They will go in and explain and interpret guidelines for you versus the state inspectors that are there just to go through their regulations, and you don't have the ability to ask them questions like you would with an accreditation surveyor.
Right, and they're unlikely to give you advice, whereas certainly my experience as a surveyor HHC, and I assume your experience with Quad ASF, is that we're really digging hard to try to find evidence of compliance with the standards, and yet both the accreditation standards and, of course, the CMS standards.
Yes, that's correct.
So this is my favorite question. What's your take on should an organization prep for an accreditation survey?
That's a great question. For reaccreditation, obviously, you should always be ready for your next survey. Mm-hmm. So prior to being in your accreditation window or when you're due, I think it's always a good idea to do a mock survey and make sure that you're maintaining, but your facility should always be ready for a surveyor to walk in the door. But when it comes to prep, I think it's a good idea to go through and have someone walk through your facility and make believe they're the inspector. And that possibly will reduce some of the anxiety when the inspector walks in the door.
So what's your advice? Of course, both you and I are consultants, so we have a vested interest in recommending a mock survey, but that's not the only way to prepare or to get people ready for the types of questions a surveyor would ask. So let's just start with the question, if an organization doesn't want to hire somebody from outside, what do you think they should do to prep or to prepare themselves for a survey?
I think the best thing to do is to go through your manual standard by standard and involve everybody, all the team players that are involved, that are going to be involved in the inspection, and go through and make sure you've met each standard. Also, I believe it's a great idea to tab your policy manual with the policies that the surveyor is going to ask for. I think that's a good way to prepare for your survey.
So who from the ASC should be involved in preparing for that survey? And again, when we're referring to preparing, we mean both always being prepared and preparing perhaps for that initial survey. You know, who in that team should be going through this process of preparing?
Well, obviously the nurse manager, nursing director, usually is the person that kind of oversees everything. The medical director should also be involved. They need to understand what the inspector is looking for and what their responsibility is as a medical director. And then I always like someone from each area, someone that oversees the sterilization, and then some of the staff nurses should also be involved. But the nurse manager is the main person who's really going to oversee and that's going to work directly with the inspector.
So let's talk a little bit about what you should prepare, you know, what type of documents you should prepare, whether they should be, of course, this gets into, something that you're very much involved in. Should things be electronic? Should they all be on paper? If they are electronic, how should they look? Let's talk about the old-fashioned way, which is books and binders. What types of things should be available for that surveyor? What should you have prepared even before the surveyor shows up on the doorstep?
So I like to have all the manuals ready for that surveyor when they walk in the door. For example, the policies and procedures, a tabbed policy and procedure manual. You should also have your logs available, your daily logs from all your daily tests. You should have your infection control tracking ready. And then make sure that you have the employee files and the credentialing files available. And then your quality improvement studies and GWAPI tracking if you are Medicare deemed or Medicare certified.
So, Tamara, you mentioned tabbing the policy manual. What types of things do you think you should tab in that policy manual?
I think it's important to go through your accreditation manual, and where it states that you need a policy, you definitely should tab that policy. And then it doesn't mean that the surveyor is not going to ask you for additional policies, but it will save their surveyor a lot of time if you tab that, so they don't waste time flipping through and finding your policies.
Yes, please. We have such a limited amount of time to do a survey. You're absolutely right.
So, Tamara, for people new to the process, can you explain what the actual accreditation survey process is and sort of walk us through a typical day?
Absolutely. So I try to prep all my facilities to let them know exactly what is going to happen to reduce their anxiety and to be able to answer the surveyor's questions. And reducing anxiety is being prepared, knowing that you've gone through your manual, that you have all the files ready for your surveyor, and that you're prepared for them to walk in the door. So when they walk in the door, you want to make sure that you have a location for the surveyor to sit. You need, usually your nurse manager is going to be designated to assist the surveyor and give him a tour. And then that surveyor will probably ask for your operating room log so they can start picking out the patient files that they are going to review. And then I tell my facilities that they should make a list of the staff that's there that day and when the cases are, because they usually have to observe a surgical procedure that day. So when they first walk in the door, they usually have an opening conference and let you know what they're going to want and in what order they want it. And they're going to pick a procedure that they want to observe. And then usually they do a tour. I always like to give them a floor plan so they can get their bearings. And then from there, they will ask you for certain paperwork that they want to review. I always like to have someone available for them, especially if your charts are electronic. It's easier for someone to come in and help them navigate through your charts. All the other paperwork from your policies, hopefully they're tabbed. And to make sure that when they request the patient files that you have them prepared if they're paper, or have an employee ready to assist them to navigate your EHR. And then be ready for them to ask you questions. The surveyors will not interfere in any of your cases, but everybody needs to be aware that when they ask for something, you should try to get the surveyor what they need in a timely manner, because they're only there for a limited amount of time and they have a lot of paperwork to accomplish in that short amount of time. So at the end of the survey, they'll have a closing conference and they'll usually go through if you've had any deficiencies. And that's your opportunity to ask questions if you don't understand. It's not a time to argue with the inspector if you don't understand. It's a time for the surveyor, and they are usually consultative and they want to explain to you. So especially if you have a deficiency, that's a good time to ask questions on how you fix it and what do you need to do. Do you need policies? Do you need training? And they usually will explain in depth on how to fix that deficiency.
So, Tamara, who do you think should be at the closing conference of an accreditation survey?
Well, definitely the medical director needs to be in attendance, the nurse manager. And then if there's any key people that were involved, if your staff is all there, I always encourage everybody to attend because it is consultative and you want everybody to learn. But definitely the medical director and the nursing manager need to be in the closing conference.
One of my favorite stories is I was doing a survey for a hospital physician joint venture, and they shut the operation down in the afternoon of the final day of the survey. And they brought all employees of the center in to listen to the exit conference. Now, they also had a big cake in the room and champagne. They were pretty sure that they passed that survey, I thought. But I'll tell you something. We were really impressed that they didn't really mind that everybody heard the results of that survey. So, I mean, that's my perception, is that the more the merrier there. And to have everybody there, you know, shows your confidence and your ability to meet the conditions and the standards.
Yes, I agree with you.
So one other question I have is, what's your perception of, should somebody be with the surveyors at all times, or, you know, what type of space should you give them during the survey?
Well, I think the nurse manager should be available to the inspector, and that doesn't mean sitting in the room with them, because usually they need time. If they have another surveyor with them, there's things that they want to discuss. Sometimes they need to call into home base and ask a question to the agency, but you should be readily available to them and let them know where you're going to be. So if they do have a question, they're not running around the surgery center searching for you. And you can also ask them, you know, when you should check back, you know, when they're reviewing files, you could say, you know, I'm going to check back in, you know, 30 minutes, or how much time do you need? And let them know that you're available for them.
Right. And my feeling on this one is you should ask the surveyor. Like myself, I like having company the whole time. I don't mind having somebody there, you know, except, of course, when I need to, you know, have some alone time to write things up, or when I might need to consult with another surveyor. I often do a lot of solo surveys, so it's not a problem for me to have somebody with it. But I think the point being here is that every surveyor is going to be different, and asking them up front, don't assuming that they're going to want somebody in the room or not want somebody in the room.
Right.
So let's get back to the topic of a mock survey. We talked about doing it in-house, you know, preparing yourselves by perhaps having somebody, you know, walk around and pretend to be a surveyor. My feeling, and perhaps yours, or I guess that's my question to you, is what do you think about the advantages of using somebody from outside the organization to do a mock survey in preparation for an accreditation survey?
I think it's a great idea to use consultants. Especially this is your first time around, if you're a new nurse manager and you've never gone through accreditation, I think a consultant can be very helpful. There's a lot to do to prepare for accreditation, from developing policies and procedures, your infection control and quality program, life safety code if you're seeking Medicare, and then you have the applications, you have ordering supplies. So I think a consultant can help accomplish this and expedite the accreditation process versus trying to do it on your own. And the consultants will usually have a policy and procedure manual, and they usually have sample surgical files. And to me, it's silly to try to create the wheel again. So I think a consultant can be very helpful, especially for people going through accreditation for the first time.
I think one of the ongoing themes of our podcasts, and certainly my books, and certainly those speeches that I do regularly, is, you know, always being prepared, always being survey ready. What do you think an organization can do? What types of things should they be doing on an ongoing basis to prepare for a survey?
Well, I believe there are several things. If your facility is not using any ASC software and you're doing everything with manuals, I think it's really important that the nursing director oversees and also delegates things like hand hygiene and watching and chart reviews and constantly overseeing to make sure that all the daily tasks are being completed, and weekly and monthly. I think checklists are always a good idea to make sure that you don't forget, you know, certain tasks and training that need to be done if you're still using paper documentation. But there are electronic ASC software tools that can help you make sure that you're always survey ready.
So let's talk about that, because that is certainly the wave of the future. You know, I find that so many of our organizations are still very paper-driven, including, you know, electronic medical records. And in fact, among our organizations, I think only 10% of them have electronic medical records.
So I think ASC's software can provide numerous benefits, from financial to clinical to operational performance, and it can help automate the manual processes, which I think will enhance performance and streamline operations in the surgery centers, from managing surgical supplies to implant management to pre-op paperwork, credentialing maintenance, and now accreditation maintenance.
So, Tamar, of course, these computer tools are great. They can help you make sure your documentation trail is perfect for a survey. But there's some pitfalls with it. Can you talk a little bit about some of those pitfalls?
Absolutely. Within the software, there's a lot of things that I think people overlook and click away versus really reading and doing a task appropriately, what happens is that things are done for you instead of you having to do them. And there's still a human factor. There's still, you know, you still have to read and you still have to do things. Let me give you an example, credentialing software. There are companies that run all these reports, NPDB and AMA reports, and facilities take these reports and they file them away. They don't read them. When it comes to re-credentialing a physician, that's when you need to be reading them. And what happens is that they just look at it and it's a check off. Oh, we completed the NPDB, we completed AMA, and they don't take the time to read it.
Right.
So I think that some of the software programs, people are like robots and just check, 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 instead of stopping and reading and analyzing the data.
Right. Even temperature logs, I find this a lot, at temperature and humidity. They just record the numbers and are so happy that they got the numbers recorded every day, but they don't actually look at those numbers to determine what needs to be done.
Correct.
So, Tamar, let's finish by asking the question that probably everybody is asking is, what are the typical problems? What are the typical things that are found during the survey? And, of course, what can I do to avoid them?
Sure. So, to me, the top deficiencies is infection control. I think people really need to stop and take a look at their infection control program. And it's not just tracking surgical infections. It's also taking a look at your sterilization and then also your supplies and where you're storing things and making sure you don't have corrugated boxes in sterile areas. I think that's another, you know, in hand hygiene. I think there's always a lot of deficiencies with infection control. We are seeing a lot of deficiencies with emergency preparedness, which for Medicare, this is a very hot topic right now. People are not understanding how to meet condition of coverage. And I also always see a lot of credentialing issues, you know, just tracking expirations for their malpractice and their medical license, also for the nurses. So I see a lot of deficiencies just in the employee and physician files. And we always find outdated medications, outdated sutures. So when it comes to infection control, there's a lot of tools and assistance you can use for free on the internet from CDC, AORN. There's also resources and ASCA that you can use for your infection control resources. And your state agencies have a lot of resources for infection control. But mainly it's staying on top of the credentialing and the employee files, which is very easy, very simple, to make sure that everyone's licenses and training is up to date and that everyone's completing their continuing education.
Okay, Tamar, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, John.
So thank you, Tamar, for your insight into accreditation. So I thought I would just end this section by talking a little bit about accreditation and regulation and how difficult it is nowadays to stay on top of things. You know, when I first got into the industry, it was possible to keep up with everything without a lot of help, though I did require quite a bit of help in the beginning because I really knew nothing about the ASC industry. But, you know, the regulatory environment, the licensure requirements, certification requirements, the accreditation requirements were all quite different 30 years ago when I first got into this. Mm-hmm. And now there's just too many changes. And the rate at which these changes occur is escalating. I think one point that I really want to make, Sue, here is the importance of understanding that you're not alone when you go into this. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of nurse managers and administrators really feel swamped. Because, you know, the owners expect them to not only run the operating rooms, run the business, keep on top of the finances, keep the costs down, but also, you know, deal with any of the regulatory things. And quite frankly, they don't think about that.
No, they don't realize what a complex job it is.
Right. And you know, we find so many of our clients, for example, you know, are struggling day to day with actually doing procedures. Many of our administrators and nurse managers are in the operating room doing those procedures mm-hmm. in addition to everything else. And, you know, the owners say, hey, listen, you know, there isn't really too much. All that other stuff is paperwork. So, you know, you can do that on the couple of hours at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, you know, undervalues the job that you have out there in keeping on top of the regulatory environment. So, you know, an administrator needs to keep on top of things by attending conferences, following the news, joining associations, hopefully listening to podcasts such as this, and of course, becoming certified. I think it's very important to look into becoming CAS certified if you're an administrator and CAPE certified if you're an infection control preventionist, because that helps to prove that you are on top of things and that you do have the deep knowledge base that you have to have in order to make sure that you're keeping your organization on the right path from a regulatory standpoint. I think smaller organizations are really challenged, which is why outsourcing is becoming popular. So this is a bit self-serving, I think. But again, it's with this theme that you are never alone. And sometimes it just becomes too overwhelming, especially in smaller organizations. And that's why, you know, organizations such as Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies exist in order to help organizations to be always prepared for those surveys. And then there's also tools out there today, such as the accreditability software, which our friend Tamar oversees over at MedTrainer, which automates various processes such as, you know, replacing the binders and clipboards with your iPad, your iPhone, or any internet-enabled device. And I think all of these things are tools and resources that are available to you, and so that you can understand and you can appreciate that if you are saddled with the responsibility of not only performing the procedures, but overseeing that regulatory environment, the accreditation environment, recognize that you don't have to do it alone. And really, these services are available at a pretty reasonable cost. So here's that takeaway. You're never alone. There's lots of resources available. And of course, listen to our podcast, because I think our goal here is to be that one-stop resource that you need in order to kind of keep on top of things. We can't give you all the answers, of course, during a half hour to hour podcast once a week to every 2 weeks. But it is our responsibility, we feel, to try to give you that news and information that will help you to become much more successful. So let's take a break and we'll come back and talk about what's going on in the industry.
So let's talk about some upcoming events in the ASC industry.
If you'd like your event to be included in the podcast, please send the event information to info@ascpodcast.com.
As one of the most sought-after speakers in the industry, John is available to speak at your state or national meeting, and the ASC Podcast with John Gailey can record an episode from your meeting.
So as we mentioned earlier, the AAHC Achieving Accreditation Conference, which is an interactive, in-depth, two-day seminar designed to help organizations prepare for a AAHC survey, is December 6th and 7th in Las Vegas. And the next seminar after that is March 13th and 14th in Miami.
Ask Us 2020 Winter Seminars are in New Orleans, Louisiana, January 16th through the 18th. The seminar features three ASC-specific tracks: finance and accounting, coding and reimbursement, and ASC management. John will be speaking in the finance and accounting track.
And the first ASC Nurse Leadership Conference presented by Progressive Surgical Solutions will be Thursday, February 6th and Friday, February 7th, 2020 at the McKesson headquarters in Dallas, Texas. Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies is a proud sponsor of the event, and we hope to record a special podcast from there.
The AORN Global Surgical Conference in Anaheim, California is March 28th to April 1st, and we'll be attending the conference and recording a special episode there with interviews of speakers.
The Florida Society of ASC's Quality and Risk Management Conference is April 16th and 17th, 2020, in Buena Vista, Florida.
The Iowa Association of ASC's 12th Annual Education Conference is April 17th and 18th in Johnston, Iowa.
ASCA 2020 is in Orlando, Florida, May 13th through the 16th. It is the ASC industry's most highly regarded and well-attended event. Attendees include physicians, administrators, nurses, managers, and owners of ASCs from across the country and throughout the world. At ASCA's annual conference, you will find more than 50 educational sessions designed for ASC professionals at every level, nationally recognized ASC management experts, networking opportunities with more than 1,000 of your colleagues, hundreds of exhibitors who can help you find the solutions that your ASC is looking for, and the latest regulatory and accreditation updates. Make sure you sign up to attend. And we will, of course, be there, as we always are, to talk a little bit, you know, with the speakers and, of course, our fellow AHS members as we talk about the various sessions that we attend.
And Becker's 18th Annual Future of Spine and the Spine Orthopedic and Pain Management Driven ASC Conference is June 18th through the 20th. At the Swiss Hotel Chicago in Chicago, Illinois.
The Florida Society of ASC's annual conference and trade show is July 15th through 17th at the Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida.
Well, that's it for this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. Join us again, and please consider becoming a patron by going to our website at ascpodcast.com and spread the word about our podcast with your friends and colleagues, and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development. All rights are reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsor, Accredibility, powered by MedTrainer. Accredibility is an online platform for maintaining your accreditation documentation. For more information and to schedule a demo, visit accredibility.com. That's accredibility.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.